Christ, said Peter. Hell is a campus.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you all of the reviews and ratings of Book Talk's most popular books and tells you whether or not you should take the time out of your busy schedule to read them. I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. And today we are reviewing R.F. Kuang's new book, Katabasis, or Katabasis. I think you can pronounce it either way. Which is about, it's a fantasy novel, but it's sort of magical realism, very similar to Babel, where the two main characters, well, there's really one main character and then the other supporting guy are both PhD students at Oxford.
Cambridge.
Girl, don't get them mixed up.
I know. Yeah. Sorry. For all the emphasis on these two schools, they are like actually identical in my brain and I don't understand the difference between them. Anyway, they're high level magician students in a PhD program and their advisor is basically like the shit. Like he is their ticket. He makes them miserable, but he's their ticket to a successful career in academia. So they put up with him. There's a terrible accident and he dies. And so these two students go to hell into the R.F. Kuang's conceptualization of hell, which is very similar to like Dante's Inferno, where there's courts of hell. And they basically go through hell in order to find their PhD advisor so that they can finish school, essentially. It's quite an extreme reaction.
And traded half their lifespan for it.
Yes. And were willing to give away half the years of the remaining life to do that for a man that they hated. So yeah, lots. That's the summary. That's the non-spoiler summary. So do you guys have reviews?
Yes. There were a lot of good one-star reviews. I'll give you that. So I found a one-star review on Goodreads, and it says, "A journey to hell shouldn't be this boring."
Yeah, I saw that one.
Sorry, on StoryGraph, you're all pretentious assholes. You're all master students. So it was hard to find ones I wanted to read. I did find a 4-star that I liked because it says, "Archimedes won me over."
Yes.
The cat.
And then I'm just going to read the first sentence of a 2.75. It says, "Hell is a 541-page novel that could have been a normal length research paper."
Snaps. Okay. I also have I have a 1-star and a 2-star review. The 1-star says, "If I had a dime for every time I gave 1-star to a book written by R.F. Kuang, I'd only have 1 dime, but I'm incredibly disappointed and shocked that it happened."
That's amazing.
Wow.
I thought that was so funny. And then the other one I wanted to read just because I felt like it really like nailed my experience with the book. And it says, "Never have I been so mentally stimulated and bored at the same time."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel that so hard.
That was good.
Yeah. But book in general, of course, R.F. Kuang is a huge name, especially in the fantasy book verse. And the overall Goodreads rating for the book is 3.95 out of 5, which has to be the lowest of any book she's written. And we rarely read books on the podcast that have ratings below 4. The Fable is more generous, 4.1 out of 5, and StoryGraph is 4.12 out of 5.
Kind of low for like them too.
Yeah.
Especially for an R.F. Kuang book.
Yeah, this book just came out too.
Right. And it's a hefty girl and she's not a quick read, which we'll obviously discuss. But yeah, so there's a lot more to come and I'm really interested to see how those ratings change over time. Because I think the people who read this book immediately are her super fans who are more likely to enjoy the book. So I actually think those could get lower over time, but we'll see.
I finished this book not long before we're recording this, and I'll be the first to I'll give you my rating if that's okay. I gave this a 3. I don't know what to think about RF Kuang. This was similar to Babel, which I gave a 2.
Mm-hmm. I remember you gave that one a 2.
But the one we read of hers before this was Yellowface, which I gave a 5. Yeah. This one was more like Babel. I think I liked it better than Babel. I gave it a 3. This book was so slow. And it was the opposite of an Odyssey. Nothing happens in hell. That's the hell of it. but it like just tickled my brain enough to not get like a 2 from me. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. Peter probably saved it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it was still like really on the nose about its point on like academia. Mm-hmm. But it was less on the nose than Babel was about the colonialism stuff. It was still like, you know, a third of the way. I'm like, I get it. Okay. But at least this one didn't like try to like kill me with its point, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a 3. I don't know how to feel about it. It was fine. But that was a lot of pages for something not so interesting.
Yeah. I think this book, the fault that I can find with it is the page count. I do think that there's the journey in hell where she's just walking in the desert for a long period of time.
541 pages of it, to be specific.
Yeah, that's a lot to walk in the desert. But I also was very fascinated by the book and very interested in it. And I didn't really want to put it down because I thought it was very interesting. But I did have to put it down because it was very mentally stimulating and I needed breaks. So it was taken in small chunks over a week. But I gave it 4 stars because I liked the journey. I liked the world building and I did actually like the main characters. So I was fascinated throughout, wanted to know what would happen, how they would end up, wanted to know more about their backstory. So I can't really find a ton of faults with it, except for it being very, very long.
I'll fill in the faults later. Don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is interesting. Okay, so I also gave it 4 stars, but I felt very similarly to this book as I did to The Women, mm-hmm. which is a book I also gave 4 stars, but sort of hated. And that's how I feel about this one, is it's so rich and complex that I feel like I can't give it less than 4 stars. And I was always just interested enough in the journey that it never lost me. But I also have some pretty harsh critiques of the novel in general. I just think it's really obsessed with itself. And it's like, I'm not opposed to a pretentious read. I think we all know that. This book was a little too pretentious for me at times. And that's a hard bar to hit. And I just didn't think it was that great of a story. Like, I thought it spent way too much time trying to get into the theory and the philosophy and kind of making everything about this elite PhD world and sort of proving itself without actually being an interesting journey with interesting characters. And so, I don't know. I honestly, like, I gave it 4 stars, but that's a pretty soft 4.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, I did feel like we went way too heavy on the magic system. Like, I think you can suspend disbelief for a bit. Like, you don't need to like detail literally every contradiction and theorem possible to mankind. Yeah, but I don't know. I think it's a very interesting take on like the 9 realms of hell.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely
that was the least interesting interpretation of hell you could come up with.
I thought parts of it were interesting.
Yeah.
50% of the book is her sitting in the sand thinking, cut that out. Way more interesting.
Oh, agreed. Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, honestly, I love the idea and the potential of this book more than I actually loved the book. So, yeah, we'll see. But okay, let's get into our non-spoiler discussion. Was the book more plot or character driven?
I mean, plot.
Yeah.
It is. So the plot is that they go to hell to rescue the advisor. And the plot is, you know, how they try to find him if they're successful and if they get back to the surface.
Which is all, that part's all very interesting. It's the part mm-hmm. where they're like assessing the theories of how hell exists and stuff, all the like logic proofs behind it and the math proofs. And I'm like, I haven't done proofs since eighth grade geometry. No, thank you.
I hate it. Ugh.
So it's like, I'm like, okay, I follow it, but I kind of hate this, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So the plot was interesting.
And there is a lot of character development. Like, basically, it's trying to show almost how brainwashed PhD students are and how kind of complicit they are in their own, like, I think dehumanization is a strong word, but also, like, that's kind of what happens. Like, they just kind of get used, like, mules by their advisors. And so I think that was interesting, seeing Kwong, like, try to display the system and like what goes on with it. But it was obviously still a plot driven book. And I don't know, I have some thoughts about some of the character development that happened.
Yeah.
I also want to know how Cambridge feels about the plot.
Yeah, probably not great.
Yeah.
But she's got like 5 PhDs and some of them are from there. So.
Well, she never had anything bad to say about Cambridge. She called it really a magical place. So the setting was fine. It was just the professors that weren't so fine.
Well, and the protection of said professors and oppression of women and other things that come with academia. So I'm like, it still wasn't.
I liked that messaging.
I think it's a universal message. Yeah. Just the name she happened to give it in this book was Cambridge, which is
right. No, I think they're pretty mad at the way that their PhD programs are portrayed to run.
Also, this was what, the 60s?
Yeah,
1960s. So, like, things have changed. We'll say that.
Yeah, that's how they're avoiding the lawsuit.
Yes.
Okay, so we've kind of already answered this question. We've read two other R.F. Kwong books on the podcast. So, obviously, we've read other books by the author before. I haven't said it yet. I gave Yellowface 4 stars, I think, and I gave Babel 5 stars. So I was a fan.
Babel was Oxford, though, wasn't it?
Yes, Babel was Oxford. Still English.
So Yale's probably next. Is that her other PhD?
Yeah, she did go to Yale for PhD. I mean, she mentions Yale in this book.
Yeah. I haven't read The Poppy Wars. And I don't know if I'm curious.
That's on my shelf. Like, I bought it at Half Price Books. I just haven't had the time to pick it up because I know that it's a series and that will, it's R.F. Kwong, so it's going to take me forever to get through it. Sorry, girl, you got a reputation.
Caitlin Bartlett has read them, who's been on the pod before. And she's like, no, like, I think I like those. And I'm like, I don't know how that all fits into the scheme of her writing.
Okay. I looked at my past ratings and I gave both Babel and Yellowface 4 stars. So I'm consistent in R.F. Kwong. 4 stars all around.
Hey. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so this is the big one, I feel like, in this book. And we've already commented on it a little bit. But how is the pacing?
Horrible.
Not good.
Yeah, pretty bad. I've read books like, I think the intention with some of it was to make you feel bored, because that was part of why Hell was so horrible, is the boredom. But I think she did not successfully walk that line of like making the point without actually genuinely just boring the reader.
Yeah.
And then there were, because some of it was not just what was happening in Hell that was boring. Like, for me, it wasn't actually the downtime in the journey. It was like all the time spent on like talking about in-depth magical theories and equations, and even way too much on the backstory of why magic is so cool and why these characters want to be magicians. I was like, you can cut all these paragraphs. Like, they're just too much.
Also, magic is cool no matter what. You don't need to explain why magic cool.
Also, trigger warning, there's a lot of paragraphs where she's contemplating killing herself before, both before and after the journey down.
Yeah.
Suicide warning, yeah.
Lots of mental health issues in the book.
As someone who had an extremely busy week, and then I was even ahead in starting this book, and I had to read over 200 pages of it this morning, I was literally falling asleep at some points trying to read it. Granted, I was tired. I've had a busy week, but it's like, okay, like, and then once you get through certain parts, you're like, wait, no, I'm interested again. Mm-hmm. But like, that's not great feedback.
The book is very boring at some parts. And there's especially, and we'll get to it in the spoiler section, there's especially one part where there's like the aftermath of one incident that then goes to true boredom to the nth degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The best paced part, Peter's tummy journey.
Yes. I love
as an IBS girly, there was a section that I was like, yes.
Yeah, I loved that chapter when it was Peter's point of view.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think it also took me 4 or 5 days to read it. Though full disclosure, I had some slow days at work, so I was, you know, not always working and was spending some time doing this. Okay, but would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
No. I think I actually thought about this a lot while I was reading it. And I was like, this would be sort of interesting on screen as an interpretation, but there is so little action in most of it that I don't think you could realistically turn it into something interesting enough to put on screen.
It would have to be a complete rewrite almost, but I like the setting enough to where I want to kind of see this setting done.
I think it could be a good movie. I feel like for me, whether or not, like, I don't know how much effort I would actually put in to go see it. Like, if someone else in my life wanted to go see it, I would definitely go and, like, happily go. But I don't know that I'm, you know, first in line trying to watch something about this.
Well, I'm curious. I need to text a friend of mine who has a PhD from MIT that she got recently. And I would love to hear, because this is probably up her alley, like genre-wise, I would love to hear if she is intrigued by this book or just insulted.
Ooh.
Because some of her takes on like the love hypothesis, where some people in academia love that, she's like, that's the stupidest thing I have ever read. So I'd be interested to see her take on this.
In general,
I don't know if those people would be going to watch a movie about it.
No. In general, like, academia, and especially elite academia, is such a small niche world that I know there are group chats all over the most elite institutions in the world that are blowing the fuck up about this book. Yeah. And if I could get access to those texts, oh, I would do it.
It's like excellent marketing.
Yeah.
They're reading it.
Yeah.
Also, side note, since we're already kind of wrapping up, Catherine and I both have the physical first edition, special edition of the book, which I knew going in had two charts switched in it. Yes, there are charts in the book, if that tells you anything. I'd seen that beforehand and people were like, oh, this cool misprint, like, could be worth money in the future. No, there are whole chunks of the book missing for like 4 pages.
What?
Not for
at least in my copy.
Not for me.
There were like repeated paragraphs and like pieces missing, like paragraphs missing for four pages where those two things were switched. It's around pages like 68, 69, 70.
Yeah. No, I didn't have stuff missed. Yeah,
straight up repeated. Honestly, the parts I was missing were math. So I was like, okay, I wasn't going to read it anyway, but
yeah.
Oh my God. A fair warning. It was weird.
Yeah, I saw the flipped graphs because I could tell that they were flipped and I knew ahead of time. But I did not see the repeated sentences and stuff like that. That was not a thing for me.
Yeah, you'd like read a couple paragraphs and then you'd see part of one again. And then it would skip something and then go on and then it would do it again. It was like twice that there was that kind of pattern. And it was super weird.
Right. Anyway. That's really interesting and sad. Also, before we get to the spoiler alert section and everything, also trigger warnings for sexual assault, sexism, abuse, like
there's major, major on suicidal ideation.
Yeah. But shout out to the IBS girlies. You've got a real one in this one. So
yeah.
cool. I feel like this part is going to be so ruthless. What are y'all's busy girl ratings?
Can I give it a zero?
Right.
I think we may have for Babel.
That's why I was like, I think our last zero.
Babel was only zero. Zeros.
Yeah, zero.
And this one is busy girl's also a zero for me.
Yeah. Wow. I was going to give it like a one.
Okay. My argument for a zero is A, parts of the book are kind of objectively boring.
Yeah.
Some of the pacing, even when it's not boring, is really off. And it's really niche, mathematical, weighed down story that's a lot of pages. So, and I didn't really love the book. So I think it's actually hard to make an argument for the book. Like, why read it when you're busy?
Yeah. Well, and I do think people who never pursued post-secondary education, like if you went straight into the workforce, you'd probably be reading this book and be like, why am I reading this? You've never set foot on a college campus. Like, and we're not even grad students. We're just undergrads. Like, you wouldn't, there would be no reason to read it. It's like, haha, academia is hell, but.
Even I felt like that sometimes. I was kind of like, honestly, at times, this book was like just reading rich people problems. I was like,
making you feel stupid. Yeah.
Let me just like play a sad song on the world's tiniest violin for the smartest people and most successful people in the world. Like,
pretty much.
Girl, yeah.
I'll still give it a one just because I thought like the overall plot was interesting and the like growth of the characters. Decisions made by the end of the book were redeeming, but I won't give it anything higher than a one.
So zero, totally. Zero, one.
Totally fair. All right, so with that, we can get to our spoiler section. So now we're going to get into the book. If you want to read it, don't listen, because we're going to spoil it for you. Our first question is, how does this book compare to the other R.F. Kuang books we've read? Which is really interesting because all her books are extremely different.
Yeah. Because Yellow Face was short, which we did not expect.
They're all very satirical, though. Like, yes. The hyperbole and the point she's trying to make are all, that's like her thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got a point she wants to get across, so she writes a book about it.
Right.
And this maybe one, I just like Yellow Face better because it was more my world of books and journalism and authorship and things, but
shorter.
It was shorter and the pacing was better in that book.
For less sure. Pretentious as well, just like more accessible writing. It has a lot of the similar notes to Babel, elite institution, sort of ragtag group of kids that are on the receiving end of some of the institutionalized problems. And, you know, how they deal with them. So similar in that way, for sure. Also similar magic system with everything being about linguistic redundancies or logical gaps and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think Yellow Face is my number one, no matter what. It was just like such an interesting book and also a lot shorter. And I think it was more accessible to a busy girl during their busy life. I don't know. Like, I feel like Babel and Catabasis is like on par for me. Like, they're about the same, in my opinion.
Interesting. My number one is definitely Babel. I think Babel, still, I was really fascinated with the world, the magic system. And I thought it was a great story, very interesting story with lots of twists and turns. This one, I didn't give the book as much credit for the world because it did feel like a little bit in the same universe as Babel. So it didn't wow me as much with like the setup, and then I didn't like the story as much. So this one is definitely my third, and Yellow Face would be my second.
This is my second. Yellowface is my first. Babel is my last. Y'all know I just did not have a good time with Babel. It was so long. I wasn't a, like, the magic system was unique, but also I was not super into it. And I thought by the end, it was like so aggressive in its messaging. I was like, whoa, you had my attention already. You didn't need to do that. So yeah, this one sits firmly in the middle of the three I've read for me.
Nice. Well, what did you guys think about the main character, Alice, and the world of magicians?
I felt bad for Alice because I think she's more impressionable than she thinks she is. Because she's like a very, very smart lady, but then is so easily manipulated by someone.
Frickin' Americans.
Yeah, frickin' Americans. Giving Americans a bad rap. But she was just so easily manipulated and denigrated. And I hated, I got it, but I hated the commentary on feminism in this book and how like everyone was anti-feminist. And I was like, fuck off. Like feminism.
That was a time period though.
I know, but like, fuck off. Like you are taking all the pleasures of feminism without actually taking up the mantle. Like you, yeah.
Well, but she talked about.
She pays the price for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I hated Alice. Yep. I hated Alice and Peter. I thought they were both insufferable. I thought they were both so high on their own shit, which I think is kind of the point. I think there were definitely certain points where they're supposed to be unlikable, like when Alice betrays the Elspeth. But I just didn't think they had a lot of redeemable qualities, like I think it's possible to get the message across and portray a character with unlikable traits without making them an unlikable person. And I just thought both of these characters were just straight up unlikable people.
Yeah, I liked Peter.
I liked Peter better than Alice. He was quirky and cute. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like Alice for like 75% of the book. I was like, oh my God, you're trying to save a man who is very clearly abusing you in many ways. Like, why would you do this?
I didn't understand her logic. Yes, that was my...
Right. I think that was the point.
Yeah. Wanted to trade half her lifespan, basically to just get revenge on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
Well, when I found out it was a revenge, that's when I started to like her. Because at first I thought she was really just trying to bring him back. I'm like, why?
I thought both reasonings, even before we figured out it was revenge, were stupid because I'm like, that's such a waste of life. But also it shows her like suicidal thoughts, like she literally had no value to her life, like she didn't value it at all.
And I'm still not even sure what Peter's real reason was.
He was in love with her, I guess, was supposed to be.
Yeah.
So he was going to save her advisor.
But I also but he also said that he felt guilty and felt guilty. Like he killed him.
But and also, like, the man sucked. I mean, I get it. You felt
and Peter recognized he sucked throughout the whole book.
Yeah.
I don't know. Alice is so, like, I don't even want to say morally gray because, like, she's just, her moral compass is a totally different compass than other people are using. And I think the point is the academics use a different moral compass when you see, like, the levels of hell. But I don't know, like she was really unlikable for a very large portion of the book.
And I mean, I think you can credit her professor for that, where for 6 years she was facing physical, mental abuse from her advisor and was maimed by said advisor by giving her a tattoo that made her remember everything, which sounds like a nightmare. I would never want that tattoo in the first place. Why would you think that's a good idea to never forget anything?
I really thought about the good things. She's like, it'll make me so smart.
Then you can't forget anything.
When you're so, I guess that's probably why I liked her. She's so singularly driven by one thing and only one thing that like, why would you like her? I don't have that thing in my life. Like well, we have nothing in common.
The point of the book is that it's unhealthy. Like it's bad for her.
So I'm not sure you're supposed to like her.
No.
Right. She's an anti-hero. I do think probably my favorite part of the book and the part of the book that I thought was done really, really well was showing how their involvement in academia had eroded their morals and had turned them into these people who are not good people, where the ends always justify the means. And it actually reminded me of Tender as the Flesh, where it's like, you know, that dehumanization, you can't stop it. Like, if once you get used to being abused and abused and abused, you just start to see it and you justify the abuse, then you see it as justified when you do it to others. I think part of the reason I still hated them so much is I don't know that the critique was fully brought home, because I think the point for me that was missing was questioning the role of elite institutions in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, I am personally very critical of kind of elite private schools because they have the allure of prestige and the reputation of prestige when most, like 99% of what they do is educate the most privileged and wealthy people. And look, okay, don't bring out the knives. Like, I know there's tons of really, really smart, devoted students in these elite institutions, but most of their function is just to reinforce the most elite classes, like, power and privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, like, not part of it at all. Like, them questioning, why did I even want to do this? Why did I want to
do this? I think that's because she assumes you read Babel.
Yeah. But even in Babel, it's like, the institution itself is criticized for its treatment of others, but not what the institution represents as a function of knowledge and influence. And so I just thought that it was kind of vapid almost. Like, we're supposed to feel so bad for these students when they don't even recognize, like, that they're willfully participating in what is, like, an inherently classist and elitist institution.
The immense amount of privilege they have for their situations. The fact that
they're so, like I said, they have the singular goal. I don't think they even realize, you know, which is an issue. But I think that's why it never comes up to her, because she's not thinking about that.
I mean, they do call it out at the beginning where she says, like,
Peter grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth or whatever.
Yeah. Well, also the fact that, like, she calls graduate students delusional. Like, she calls herself and others delusional. That's how you live as a graduate student, is on delusion. And especially when you're studying, quote unquote, analytical magic, it's all about contradictions. It's all about logic. It's all about finding the paradoxes and things. So if you're constantly living in a state of delusion and a state of contradictions to own world and society, why would you ever see humanity right? Why would you ever see anything right? Because you're constantly living in this delulu state that no one else sees.
Right. And they are delulu.
Yeah, they're delulu. I mean, in the first place, going to hell was the stupidest part of this book. Like, I was just like, what are you doing? I was, like, screaming at myself in my head, just being like, you fucking moron.
Well, and the only reason to keep reading is not because you like them or like what they're doing. It's because you want to see what's going to happen to them when they retreat.
This
terrible person.
Yeah, it's a train wreck. You're watching a train wreck.
Right. However, my issue with Peter was that I feel like we're supposed to just excuse his incredibly selfish and just, like, privilege blind perspective just because he has IBS, which I thought...
He had Crohn's disease. Very different.
Crohn's disease.
I cannot claim my things are like his, but similar.
Sorry. I know they're different, but any stomach issue, I kind of refer to as IBS, which I probably shouldn't do. I thought the representation of it extremely well written and very well done. But to me, it did not absolve him of the things that he had done and the way he had treated people. Like, I understand him wanting to be private about it and feeling like if he tells people, they'll just see him as a victim and they'll discount him or he won't have opportunities. Like, all of that, great. Okay, but that doesn't excuse you just, like, ghosting people and, like, not doing your work and just expecting everyone to still love you. Like,
also making comments about Alice and her relationship with
him. And this blatant sexism that he felt free to treat her with once he felt betrayed by her. Like,
no, his like elite status allowed him to act that way. And when the professor finally was like, okay, and it's the first time he ever faced pushback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did, like, as someone who has IBS, not Crohn's disease, just like how it was written about, like, she either has it or knows someone with it, because like, just the, like, having to think about every single thing you eat and how things are going to go when you're at this place or this place, or, like, are you close to a bathroom, XYZ, like, that, and how stressful that can be when you're having, like, flare-ups, was really well written. I was like, honestly, no, I know why he just goes to people. It's other people's fault for not asking.
Yeah. No, I agree. I liked, that was, like, one of my favorite chapters in the book, also a girly with IBS. And him talking about how he saw people when he was, like, his ninth birthday, and it was, like, he was homeschooled basically all his life because of all these flare-ups. And all these kids came over, and he was having a great time until finally the girl basically said, like, oh, we're here because you're a charity case. And that's when he kind of started shutting people out. And I was like, that's so fair. As a nine-year-old, that logic is that's sustained.
Like, all of it, I followed his logic. Unlike Alice, who I never followed her logic.
Her logic was into the way. I don't know.
I'm not saying it was good logic. It was flawed logic. But it was, I followed it.
Yes. And I think there's an immense amount of privilege that he has Crohn's disease in a very well-off family who can help him and is there to comfort him and make him comfortable, have all these tutors come in to teach him all this stuff. Like, it's an immense amount of privilege he experiences, but I definitely like the way that the disease was portrayed. I don't like what he went about with, but I think he also figured out pretty quickly that, like, yeah, you can't just trust people to, like, accept your excuses and for you to just disappear and be okay.
Yeah, no. And I, as someone who did end up briefly in the hospital, like, overnight for this stuff in college, your professors didn't really give a shit. And you just had to keep going. I showed up no matter how bad I felt, you know?
Yep.
And that was undergrad at not an elitist institution.
Same. You just show up.
I did really like the point that how much sympathy or, like, accommodation that you get is just about how much people actually understand what you have. And, you know, back in the 60s or whatever, they did not understand Crohn's. So he did not get a lot.
It still feels silly to be like, hey, my tummy hurts. Like, I related to that so hard.
Yeah.
But they're, like, the people in my life understand and support me, even if, you know, like, a professor or an employer may not want to know about your tummy issues. If he had just told people around him what he was dealing with, he would have found a different kind of support system.
Yeah. But he didn't want that pity again. So I understood his
loss. So back to the elitist thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So what did you think of Peter and Alice's relationship?
And what relationship?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. What relationship?
I knew you guys were going to be so anti this relationship. As soon as I finished the last page, I was like, this is going to piss off Casey.
I'm not anti. They deserve each other.
Yes.
But
that is so scathing.
Yes.
But she literally, like, left him to die.
Yes. That was so
multiple points. Once by choice, once not by choice.
And he had treated her so poorly at certain points in the book that she actually believed he would leave her to die.
Yes.
Like, what?
And they're all like, oh,
her logic well,
we
made
were
sense.
Just holding all these secrets from each other. And now that we know all the secrets, we can let our love flourish. And I'm like, no.
Also,
As the side of the book says, if you have the special edition, the print on the side has a really pretty design. But if you look closely, it says hell is other people.
Period.
That's their relationship.
Yep. Also, you do not get an excuse just because you're in hell to make the whole arc of a romance be miscommunication.
Yep.
Correct. And also, it didn't even come into play until 75% into the book.
Yeah, like, they like,
I thought maybe there was some tension originally, and then I was like, never mind. And then it came back. I was like, oh, well, you forgot to loop it in the rest of the book.
Yeah.
Like, I think there was a kind of always an undercurrent of, like, they probably would be together if they didn't have all this miscommunication, or, like, just in general, like, vibes.
So, like,
but it was weird.
Typical trope, you end up with the person you're competing with academically. Yeah. I dated my orchestra stand partner in high school that we were competitive with. And finally he was like, you want to go out? And I was like, oh, you know, like it's just, it happens. So I understand why that's in there, but.
I mean, it's trauma bonding. They went through literal hell together.
Right.
And that's why the three of us have a podcast.
trauma bond.
Just start a podcast. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's so true. So true. Or perhaps even therapy, dare I suggest.
Oh, 60s. We so much therapy. No. Yeah. It's the 60s.
Right. I also thought, like, I don't know if I've ever read two characters who were supposed to like each other that had so little chemistry. Like, they just...
Well, they never...
She talks about all their fun times, like, they did kiss. She talks about all their fun times in the lab or whatever. And I think that's what we're supposed to interpret as their spark.
It did not sizzle and pop. It did not.
No. They needed to have more spark, more building up of this relationship is that if that's how they wanted to end it.
Mm-hmm.
And less about her walking through the desert.
Yep.
And then she's like, I'm doing this all for Peter. I'm like, bitch, you wanted to die 2 pages ago.
Yeah. You actually also, which I get, again, I stand by her decision to leave him in hell. Yes. But now all of a sudden you're so thrilled and in love with him that you have to find a way to bring him back. What?
Yeah. And you also knew as soon as he disappeared, that's what was going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? He was coming back no matter what.
I was like, well, I'm not even sad
because
he ain't gone. Also, can we just talk about that part real quick?
That he just emerges from.
If you die in hell, your soul is destroyed.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Where the hell did he come from?
Huge plot hole.
Yes.
I had the same experience where Peter died. I didn't even bother to feel sad because I knew they'd find a way to bring him back. But that's exactly what I thought is there are no stakes in this book. If the one stake is that if you die, your soul is literally shredded. And then that's not true. I'm like, okay, so then what were the stakes?
Yeah.
They're fine.
Because I knew about the soul exchange thing, but I'm like, if he has no soul, what exchange do you have?
And right? Then I was like, ooh, make him come back like a soulless monster. That would slay.
That would
be so cool.
It was such a, like, overly idealistic ending for a book that I think was supposed to be a fairly scathing portrayal of the characters. Like, yeah. Again, like, there are definitely points, like, no matter what you felt about the characters, where they're definitely being unlikable. And then they get this weird fairy tale at the end of this journey through hell. And I was like, this just feels like
from the benevolent god of the underworld.
Yes.
Yeah, I immediately was like, no, what would have been a better ending? This quote unquote benevolent god smacking her around a bit and saying, you're an idiot. You think you understand everything? No, you fucking don't. I am king of hell. Bye-bye. Right.
I'm giving you a transcript now. And
I like that she was trying to mix in like the Chinese deity who was supposed to be nicer. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like everybody has their different interpretations, blah, blah, blah. However, the fact that he just let her, he brought Grimes to her so she could torture him and then just let her walk out of hell with part of her life back and her lover.
Yeah. Yes.
But
it was a massive tone shift that was like whiplash for me. I was just like, this just does not fit with the rest of the novel and what this was supposed to be. This should have been a tragedy. Like, she should have not been able to get out. Like,
there were consequences. There should have been consequences.
There should have been, if you were going to truly do the love angle, it should have been like an Orpheus Eurydice where you can't look back. She looks back. He's gone. Like, it should have been a Greek tragedy.
Well, and also, okay, so say they do get out. I was hoping for like an epilogue where they both have left academia and are living happily outside of it, you know, like, because I feel like that should have been the point, is if you're going to go and they both get the happy ending and your whole point of the book is academia is hell. Show that they've really grown.
Yes, I big one up to that because that was a huge issue that I wanted to bring up next. And it's that I feel like this book actually like does what it's trying to critique, which is the book is trying to basically critique academia, but also sort of like portray this obsession and single-mindedness that is really toxic that the graduate students themselves have, where they're so committed to this one goal that they're willing to sacrifice themselves for it. And then the entire book is exclusively about academics. There is not a character in the book that's not a fucking academic. Okay. And so I was like, what you have done is create a book that's supposed to allegedly be showing that there is life outside of this system. And you just created a book that's all about, like, so obsessed. There's no world presented outside of the system. Like, shouldn't there have been characters that were like, this is stupid, and why are you doing this? That just were never affiliated with.
Well, Elspeth is the one who says, what are you going back to do? Like, if you're going back just to do the same thing, you're stupid.
Which is what happens. And also still in academia.
Yeah, that's the thing.
There's literally zero characters that are not affiliated with an elite institution.
Well, I think the point that all academics are going to hell is funny.
That's a funny point. But also at the same time, how did they meet so many people from Cambridge? There can't be that many people. Because they're all in hell. In the all of hell.
No, hell felt empty, okay? Yes. That is my issue. Is like, okay.
They mentioned all these
people
shade.
In the first two courts, and then you never met any other people again until the very last one. That's insane.
And every single character they interact with is obsessively trying to write a thesis.
Yeah.
Like
dissertation, excuse you.
Dissertation, excuse me. Except for the desires one where they're, you know, fucking whatever. But it's still, it's like, I feel like the book is so obsessed with academia that it actually reinforces what it's trying to not say.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you might as well go back and do academia because you have to do it when you come back here when you're dead.
Right. It was so silly.
I don't know. But so you can bet I'm never going to grad school.
Yeah. I was like, it is actually like sort of a retirement dream of mine. I really like my job and I don't really want to do academia, but it's sort of like a dream of mine to eventually get my PhD in English, literally for no purpose other than I love books and would love to just do books and like have a PhD in English. Just like when I have money and time when I'm retired. And I was like, maybe it's not even worth that.
Well, if you wanted money and time in retirement, you shouldn't have picked journalism for undergrad.
Yeah. And there's my delusion. There's my delusion student. Yep.
We all have that Delulu PhD.
There's one inside all of us.
That's what we learned from
journalism is hell. Only one of us has left.
Yeah. Hey, I actually like Alice. My job. I'm like the 1% that got lucky with a decent job. Okay. So moving on to the other plot points. What did you think of the Kripkes? That's how I've been pronouncing it.
Yeah, that's how I've been pronouncing it too.
And what about Elspeth, who is actually the hero of this novel?
Yes, love Elspeth.
Shouldn't have saved her, but whatever.
Yeah,
mistake.
Actually, Archimedes is the hero.
Yes, you're right. Archimedes. Yeah,
that's so true. He is the hero.
And that random ghost who shoved her off the cliff.
Gratis. Great. Yeah.
Maybe Jack the Ripper, question mark.
Maybe Jack the Ripper. That seemed very Jack the Ripper-esque.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was like, oh, I got flashes of whatever. Maybe I was right. And I was like, ew.
Yeah.
I thought the Kripkes were really interesting as like they were kind of like shunned by academia because they were like this odd couple doing very fanciful like theater performances essentially with their magic, which I mean, why wouldn't you if you had fucking magic? Make money off of it, you dumbasses. Like, yeah. The masses are very easily like won over. Like, good. But I thought they were a very interesting villain. I liked them as a villain. And the idea of they were trying, like, they killed themselves to try and like come back from hell and show that that's possible. It's a very villainous thing to do, morally black characters. But the idea of them taking over hell, and that's why there's no Sojourner accounts like in the modern era, because they have been stealing all their blood to use. Like, it was very interesting. It made the plot run quicker in the parts where like they were present. And I liked like their traps. I liked how smart they were, but also I liked their relationship at the end. Like, I thought that was really sweet how
they murdered their child twice.
Not the child. I meant the husband and wife, and how they truly did love each other. Like, it was, and it was obvious to everyone how much they like respected and loved each other.
Ron, it was interesting how Alice realized the one woman who she could have admired in academia who wasn't getting walked all over, she just like murdered.
Yeah.
And no one ever believed this person. Like, no one gave them credit because they thought they were like hokey Vegas magicians. And turns out they were smarter than everyone else.
Yeah.
I did like that point that often the most lauded professionals or experts are not necessarily the actual like most talented or most, they're not necessarily ones who are actually doing the most important inventive work, because there definitely is this attitude that certain things are in vogue and are prestigious, and then certain things are cheap or easy or not as prestigious. Because I think we see that with the literary world a lot, like certain types of narratives and storytelling always win the Pulitzer, even though they're these boring ass books, just because they tell a story in a way that is in vogue with these sort of elite ideas right now. Mm-hmm. So I loved that point. I actually wish there was more from the Kripkes. I found them a little bit too easily defeated.
So anticlimactic.
Yeah. There was not enough, for all we heard about them before they were actually like on screen, I expected a little bit more infamy, a little bit more fight. And it just never happened.
Well, all the time wandering the desert, we could have had more Kripkes.
Yeah.
There should have been more Kripkes.
I expected
it sounds like they randomly had traps everywhere. Why didn't you encounter more of them?
Yeah.
Right. And also, like, if there's only, like, one... from the Kripke's perspective, if they're still on this mission, hardly any living beings actually end up in hell, especially that have as much blood as a human. So you would think for them, a human being in hell that they know about is, like, literally, like, becomes their single-minded focus.
But you find out they cared more at that point about getting the whatever you call it from Elspeth.
Yeah, the perfect, I don't even remember.
True contradiction,
there we go. Because I was just like, I don't know. I guess that's true. The point is I found them anticlimactic, I guess.
Yes,
they were. But I did love Elspeth.
Yeah.
That whole scene was anticlimactic.
Yeah, it was too easy.
The most surprising part was when the wife walked into the water with the kid.
Yeah. Yep. Also, I found it so grotesquely unbelievable that Elspeth would rescue Alice and give her the true contradiction and apologize to Alice. She apologizes to Alice, who tried to betray her and steal her life's work and damn her to hell. Like, that's crazy. And she was like, you know what? I'm sorry. I shouldn't have kicked you off my boat for trying to steal everything I ever worked on for literal years.
No, it was crazy. I think it was supposed to be like they were both abused by the same abuser. They're both women in academia. I think there's supposed to be like a kinship there of like abuse survivors, but not really survivors. But yeah, I thought that was a little unbelievable that she would come back. And I thought it was going to happen. I kind of figured she would be come back into the narrative, but it did feel a little unbelievable that she would apologize to Alice. I feel like what she could have done would be like, I'm not here to apologize. I'm not here to ask for your ask for you to say sorry. I'm just here because we were both abused by the same man, and I'm here to knock some sense into you and make you realize.
Also, she said the flower can only be used for one person, and then she takes Peter with her.
Yeah.
Yes. I thought that was such a huge plot hole, actually, because also they build up this true contradiction to basically be like, you can get whatever you want from the gods if you have this. But then she's like, oh, but you can only ask for one thing. I was like, why?
She if you have all it, things and it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. In the end, you asked for a million things. You got all of them.
Yeah, like, probably could have taken she deceived Elspeth again, basically.
Yes. And also then all of a sudden Elspeth decides that she actually wants to like work the hell program. And I was kind of like, I get why, but also it just felt like such an abrupt shift to for her to finally get what she wanted. I mean, I guess maybe that's how she realized she didn't want it anymore. But it was like she finally got what she wanted and then just reversed it all instead. I found it really kind of.
She had it before she met them, which we found out. But it
was so convoluted to me.
I don't know. Maybe that one I didn't put as much thought into because I feel like she met these people and realized maybe I don't have a lot to go back to, or maybe I don't want to go back to this world in this specific way, mm-hmm. back to what I was, if this is how these people are still like living their lives, you know? So maybe like I kind of just interpreted it that way, but it was a very kind thing to do with nothing in return.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Next up, the person who is supposed to be our ultimate big bad, Professor Grimes. What did you guys think of him?
Grimy.
Grimy indeed.
Like fucked up.
The thing I really liked about his character is I think it did a really good job of showing how subtle abuse can be and how those power dynamics don't always look like screaming and yelling. Because they say in the book that he, on its face, treated some of his grad students better than others because he wasn't like loud. He was for the most part not like screaming in your face. But how he was just constantly undermining your confidence and just always making you feel a little bit stupid and then pitting you against other students to make you feel like his approval is like everything you need in the world.
Yeah.
And I do feel like that was really good.
That was really good. And like, especially at the ending when she kind of confronts him at the end and it's just like, mm-hmm. I'm realizing I'm just as smart as I was when I came into this and you made me feel stupid, but I could have done this without you. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't need you ever. You actually made me worse. You helped me in the sense of like, you gave me some knowledge, but my brain was my brain all along. I could have done this myself.
Yeah.
He was like the best written character because of how you said, like how it showed how abuse can be subtle and it's hard to realize it until it's like too late.
Right.
What did they call it? Like the boiling frog thing.
Yeah.
So I think he was the best written character. Obviously I didn't like him, and the fact that like he still had a mission to ruin their lives and use them even as like a shade. You're like, yeah. Burn in hell, dude.
Yeah.
Well, actually, don't burn in hell. That's too good for you.
It's soul's God.
Yeah. Well, is it? Because Peter came back.
That's right. Exactly what I was about to say. You're also, okay, I think I really did not like the artistic choice to bring him back ultimately.
Mm-hmm. No, I would like do the hard thing.
I liked it better when he was just a character in the background. I feel like sometimes giving those kinds of people scenes in the book gives them importance that they should have lost throughout the journey. Like,
but the whole journey was to find him.
Yes, but then her never, like her ultimately deciding that she doesn't need to see him again and he can just rot in hell and like she'll never speak to him again. To me, that was actually like a better mic drop because she's like, I came down here for him and actually, I don't want to see him. Like, it was crazy for me to do this all about him. And I just don't.
The issue is Alice is the kind of person who needs the last word.
She does.
She did need the last word, which is why I think this book kind of fails because she never really stops.
No.
Just needing him to see her.
Yeah, because she even mentions, like, during that final confrontation, like, it could be so easy. I could just fall right back into it. It would have been so easy. And then she, like, unfurls it. And obviously that needed to happen in order for Peter to come back. I think doing the hard thing should have been doing the hard thing and just leaving Peter to die. But, you know, that's kind of what we've been talking about for years on this podcast.
Yes.
People aren't doing the hard thing.
The unhappy
plot holes at the end. Yes.
Leave the unhappy ending. Because now I feel like the journey had no point. Like
it didn't. That's what she gets. She's like, oh, well, I've gone here and I've lost half my lifespan for nothing.
Yeah.
And it's your job to fix it.
Yeah.
Did anyone else think that they're going to turn into the Kripkes? because they're going to say that they went to hell. They're going to write these theses. No one's going to believe them. They're going to discredit them because they don't have any proof. And then they're just going to become the Kripkes of the academic world.
I mean, I would have been interested in epilogue, like I said earlier, to see what would happen. Because I think they're almost smart enough to realize that no one's going to believe them. So why bother? Peter was kind of already going that direction. But I'd like to know, like, were they changed by their journey?
I agree.
That should be the whole point.
Yes.
I agree.
Yeah, once we lost Peter, like, halfway through the book, that's when the book started getting real boring.
Alice was boring.
Alice was boring, unfortunately.
That was the point I was talking about in the non-spoiler section. I was just like, y'all, you just walking through the desert is too much.
Yeah, it's
in the weird garden. I don't know.
Yeah. Dis.
Yeah.
That was a new word to me.
Right. Okay, so when Alice goes to Dis, which I did think Dis was one of the most interesting concepts in the book.
Yes.
She meets Gratus, and he is this really, like, you know that he's done bad shit. Like, you just know that he has. But he kind of guides her and ultimately helps her succeed, and he saves her from death. What did you guys think of him?
I wanted to know more about him.
Yeah.
Which I get. It's supposed to be frustrating that we don't know when she doesn't know. I like that it's her wake-up call. He just takes her there to torture her, essentially, so that she'll see. He's, like, clearly been there long enough to be more self-actualized than the others. But she's like, oh, this is my eternity if I take the easy way or whatever. So I liked his concept. I thought him helping her with the Kripkes was too easy. Like, what did he owe her? Nothing.
Nothing.
There were a lot of people that were helping her for nothing when the whole point was everyone in hell wants something from you.
Yes. Right. So that part actually is the one that it's the only time someone did something for nothing that didn't bother me. And the reason is because,
well, he helped him get on the boat or whatever.
Yes. He has some epiphany and changes his mindset in some way and helps her because of it. And that's how he gets redemption. And so I was like, fine. But I did think he was one of the most interesting characters in the book, which is sort of sad because he's just like a brief interlude in comparison to the whole novel.
Him and Elspeth are the interesting characters.
Yeah. Well, and Professor Grimes.
Professor Grimes. I mean, like, it's because he's experienced so much of the human condition by living in hell and being all around this city where it's just like the city of the damned that can't seem to get out of their own way. And all of these, like, I mean, it was a very trippy city. And I did, like,
when they're throwing themselves at Cerberus.
Yeah, right, like, kill me, kill me. It's like, oh my God, y'all are crazy.
Yeah.
You want to feel something. You want to feel anything because you feel nothing. I thought it was very interesting, but at the same time, I was bored out of my mind when, yeah, because Alice was boring as fuck. She was at that point suicidal. What is life? I don't care. Whatever. Yeah. She lost the plot. She lost the whole plot.
Yeah, she did.
And apparently the ability to starve to death.
Yeah, that was a weird point. Yeah.
Yep. I felt like we kind of lost track of how much food and water she'd had. And I was like, this is all starting to feel a little convenient. Okay. So that brings us to the ending, the very idyllic, perfect, everything works out ending, and Lord Yama. And then Alice gets Peter back and they go back up to college, to school. What'd you guys think of all of it in summary in the end?
I mean, I kind of hope that they finish their PhD because Lord Almighty, spending that much money on a PhD to not do anything with it. Crazy.
Yeah. I think ultimately the reason this book left me feeling very frustrated is because I think you should have only gotten that super idyllic ending if I felt like the character had really done the work, like really done the emotional work and like fully changed and fully dealt with all the issues. And, like, that journey through hell really deeply changed her. And honestly, like, I didn't think it actually really changed her that much.
No.
Nope. The only thing she realized is the person who was bad and did bad things to her was bad. Like, I just... And so I think that's why the ending made me so mad, is I was like, a character who hasn't actually done the work shouldn't get the reward. And that's actually the basis of hell in the first place, is that the people who don't do the work don't get the reward. So...
She lucked out of the reward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How convenient.
Yep.
So disappointing ending on all fronts.
Do the hard thing.
Do the hard thing.
All right. Well, I think that's it. This was a pretty ruthless podcast for a book that at least two of us still sort of enjoyed, at least like a little bit. Mm-hmm. So yeah, do you guys have book recommendations?
I was thinking about this, and yes.
Ooh.
Let's hear it.
So we read, this is not my rec, but we read Ninth House.
That's what's going to be my rec.
Well, my rec is the second book, Hellbent. Because it's a very, very similar premise.
Yeah.
About retrieving someone from hell.
Yep.
And it does the hard things.
Yes, it does.
Oh, I didn't know that. You've intrigued me. That was a great
spell. Like, it's definitely not a perfect thing, and the ending is messy. And
yes, yeah, that's why I was gonna recommend Ninth House, is because I think it's a more accurate portrayal of academia, and it does like that dark academia.
It's also a dark academia. Yeah,
dark academia. It does. It's the underbelly of Yale. It very much so critiques Yale and critiques the whole city of New Haven and how Yale
involves like magics.
Yep.
It involves retrieving someone from hell.
The second book's very good.
It's messier. And it's so messy. Much more messy.
It's very messy.
Okay, that's really interesting. I have two, sort of. I think I kind of want to recommend Babel, just because it's another R.F. Kuang that has very similar themes, but I think is overall a better book. I know we're all in disagreement over that on this podcast, but... but the other one that I think is actually kind of a better recommendation is, oh my gosh, I literally just had the title in my head. Oh, Atlas Six.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because Atlas Six is
also
another
hurt
book.
My brain.
Yeah. It has some of the same basis in science meets magic, sort of magical realism type approach to fantasy. But I think that book does a lot better job at actually critiquing the elite institution itself and the role that it's playing, with a bunch of like teenage idiots who are portrayed as they are, which is like really brilliant idiots. And I felt like that was just overall a kind of hit the themes better and in a way that was more pleasing. And I think ultimately like more accurate.
I like it.
Cool. Well, we love hearing from you guys. If you're still listening, please rate and review our podcast. We love reading your reviews, but only if they're 5 stars. XOXO.
Next up, spooky season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're so excited. If you guys have been listening to our podcast, you know this is our favorite time of the year and our favorite month, where we just read a bunch of spooky books. So join in. You can find more of our content at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. And... that's it. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.